Noam, are you there still?
Yes, I'm there.
Okay, can you hear Matan okay?
Hello, Matan.
Hi, how are you? How's Mom?
Matan, I would like to just start with your father, if we may. I'd like, if Noam, if you can, if you could introduce your son, introduce him to the North American listening audience here, which may or may have never heard of refuseniks in Israel.
Matan is a graduate of one of the high schools in Tel Aviv, and his youth was in the Sea Scouts and in the high school as any regular student, actually as a good student. And he also was in the last 2 years involved in the politics, basically or mainly in social studies, but also in the, he was very interested in the problems that arose from the occupation and from the Israeli-Arab conflict. When he finished the army, when he finished the high school, he joined a youth movement called the Re'ut Sadaka, which is a youth movement that organizes the meetings between Jews and Arabs, youngsters in Israel. All during his during the last few years, he was also participating in a lot of activities against the occupation. When his time came to join the army, or quite a year before that, he joined the Shministim group, which is the seniors group, and together they drafted a letter to the prime minister and to the minister of defense, where they said that they cannot serve in the Israeli army as long as the occupation continues, because serving the army and doing the occupation in their own hands would be against their consciousness. And they asked to be relieved from the service in the army. Later they also said that they are willing to do some kind of civil service instead of army service. So when Matan went to the army, he told the officers there that he is not willing to join the army. He was sentenced three times by minor officers to jail, sometimes 28 days, sometimes three times of 28 days. And then one of his friends was court-martialed, and Matan felt that he should be in solidarity with his friend, and also became eligible for court martial. So the army also put him on trial, and later three other youngsters joined them. So altogether, five of them are now in the court martial. The army saying that they are refusing to obey orders, but they are saying that they cannot obey the orders because it's against their consciousness. So right now we are in the middle of the trial, where last week Chagai Matar and Matan and Shimri Tzameret, three of them, two of them finished their testimony, and the third was in the middle. In those three cases, all of them are putting forward their beliefs, their reasoning for not willing to serve in the army as long as the occupation continues. We all hope that we will convince the army that they should let them go, and that they are sincere in their objection, and that they cannot serve in the army as long as the occupation continues. But we are not so optimistic, but we hope that they will be released.
Well, we also have on the line with us Matan, who is actually being detained at the moment in trial. And Matan, we've heard your father talk a bit about your trial experience. You were testifying last week. I wonder if you can tell us a bit more about your current situation. Can you also just describe some of the reasons you gave on the stand for refusing to serve?
Sure. I have to say first that the testimony was about 2 hours long, so I won't go at that length right now. I can say that the point of the testimony as orchestrated by our lawyer, Dov Hanin, who's doing excellent volunteer work representing us. It's the basic point is to show to the army and to the court that our objection does not come from, let's say, cowardice or laziness or some other form of personal interest, but really out of the very basic dictates of our conscience, each one of us separately, and that each one of us has a very detailed and specific outlook on life, which as a conscientious outlook prevents him from joining the army, which is doing what it's doing right now to the Palestinians, which is our major objection. I have to clarify that we're not pacifists, us five, on trial, and that makes things harder for us. And that means that our objection is not some sort of general aversion to violence or to militaries in general, but specifically to the situation in Israel right now, which is the military control of over 3 million Palestinians and the continuation of this control without any seeming outlet, although things are looking up a little bit recently. There's still a long way to go before anybody can claim that Israel is doing its best to end the occupation and to make peace with the Palestinians. Personally, my condition right now is I'm in what's called open detention. I'm being held at an army base near Tel Aviv. It's not like prison in terms of the conditions. Obviously, I can talk to you, which I wouldn't be able to in prison. And basically, things aren't as bad here. I'm still deprived of my freedom, and I'm really anxiously awaiting the outcome of the trial, so maybe I can go home.
Now, Metin and Noam, I wonder if each of you can speak as to the media's coverage there of the current trial of the refuseniks. You say that there's a group of five on trial. Is that garnering much media attention now? Because all we're getting here in North America is discussion of the roadmap.
Dad, do you want to end?
Okay, it's very hard also in Israel to get the story of the five. And actually, there is another trial going on of Yoni Ben-Arzi, who is a pacifist, and his trial is going in parallel to the trial of the five. Though Yoni Ben-Arzi is he's a nephew of Benjamin Netanyahu, the former prime minister. So his trial is getting a little bit more coverage. But altogether, the two trials are not getting a lot of coverage. They got a small article after the testimonies that were very, very impressive. And there was a small article in Haaretz newspaper, which is something like the New York Times. But it's very hard to get into the electronic media. We get into some of the newspapers, but the whole issue of why these youngsters are refusing to serve in the army and the way they are exposing the occupation is very, very hard to get into the media. We have a little bit of success every once in a while, but overall it's very hard. There was one TV program which is generally talking about the media itself, and the commentator there was very, very harsh on the objectors or the refuseniks, and we were lucky that one of the people who was interviewed, a professor from Tel Aviv University, was able to contradict him and to show and to raise also the issue and say that the refuseniks are bringing some serious claims against the occupation, against the situation of the Israeli society, and in a way showing to the Israelis how they are looking, how they should be looking in the mirror. And their act is very, very important and should be dealt by the media and by any public debate beyond the simple fact that they are serving or not serving in the army. The whole issue of why they are not serving is a very important issue that is not dealt enough in the media.
The Palestinian media, on the other hand, is completely contrasting in that it's been covering us very, very widely. And especially, there was a very important initiative by some refuseniks a few weeks ago, which you may or may not have heard of in Canada. We decided as a group or as a movement which includes young people like us, as well as older people who are refusing military reserve service in occupied territories, and other people who see themselves as refuseniks. We decided that we want, as people who are against the occupation, and as people who want to see peace, who see ourselves partners of the Palestinian people, we wanted to turn to the Palestinian people and tell them what we think about the suicide attacks that are being carried out in Israel. We obviously have a very negative opinion of that. We think it's obviously very immoral, just as immoral as the actions of the military in Palestine, and that also it doesn't contribute anything to the Palestinian cause, these attacks which kill innocent civilians in Israel. So we wrote a letter. It was signed by about 100 refuseniks, and it was publicized very widely in the Palestinian media. And I don't know if I'm justified in saying this, but maybe it had some small part of contribution to the ceasefire which the Palestinian organizations have declared yesterday, and which I mentioned earlier as some sort of ray of light in the area lately.
Well, let's talk a bit more about that, the contribution of refuseniks in defining what the public opinion of the occupation will be or is currently. Some of the attention from North America to the refuseniks has debated the importance of the role of refuseniks in representing Israeli public opinion, because in looking at the numbers in the Israeli army, hundreds of thousands, yet only a couple of hundred refuseniks.
Right.
So what is the importance for you, Matan, in the role of refuseniks in Israeli society?
Well, really, it shouldn't be overestimated. You're right that we're a tiny minority out of hundreds of thousands of soldiers in the Israeli army. I do think, however, that the contribution is not numerical. The movement, however small, it's growing. That is, about 2 years ago, there were one or two people in military prison, and at any given point in time, and right now we're standing. We have a number of between 15 and 20 at each given time. The two letters, the letters of the high school seniors, which I'm a part of, and the letter of the reserve soldiers, have together over 800 signatures. And these are small numbers, but they're growing all the time. And I think also as my father said, it's very hard to get into the media, which is obviously the easiest way to reach people. But I think that when we meet people one-on-one, and I meet a lot of people, a lot of soldiers, obviously being stationed at an army camp, and I think that the effect of meeting somebody one-on-one who is refusing it's very strong on people. I wouldn't say that I convince people on an everyday basis that I'm right, but I think it opens up a question for them. For many people, serving in the army isn't even something that's questioned. Just like you go to high school and later you go to the new university, in the meantime you go to the army, and it's just something that everybody does. And whenever you have a person who not only doesn't do it, but goes outside, you know, and yells it to the public, "I'm not doing it because I think it's wrong," then that means something for a lot of people who are suddenly questioning themselves. Well, should I be doing this? I have a good friend who I talked to on the phone a couple of days ago. She's in the army, and she tells me that every time that she thinks about me and about what I'm doing, then she has to question herself, and she has to question her decision to serve in the army. And I think that passes on. From her, it passes on to the people that she knows. And that way we do make some sort of an impact. Like I said, it shouldn't be overestimated, but I think it is something. And maybe it shows a deeper current in Israeli society. Also, there's something that should be noted. There are a lot of draft dodgers in Israel. That is, there's a draft for all Jewish young people, boys and girls, and who are required to join the army. And there are lots and lots of people who get out of it in different ways, either by feigning mental illness or pretending to be religious or getting married, all sorts of ways there are of getting out of it. And even the army itself estimates that about 50% of each cycle of people who are supposed to be inducted into the army, about 50% of them don't do a complete army service, which is a huge number, obviously, and it's much greater than the number of refuseniks. I don't think all these people have political reasons, but I think that the effect of the occupation on Israeli society, and especially on young people who are sent to serve in the army, it's very heavily felt, and it's very heavily resented by a lot of people, even if those people don't have a political solution that they're aware of.
And Noam, your thoughts on that as well?
I just want to add to what Matan said, that it's a very tough struggle, and we, the parents of the refuseniks and some of the refuseniks groups, are trying to make the act of these youngsters known as much as possible. We distribute the we made a demonstration. We distribute their testimonies in the internet and pass it to other people. We do some kind of brochures. And the Shministim group, which Matan came from, are trying to publicize the fact and what's going on with the prisoners around the high school kids. And we don't see immediate results out of this, but as Matan said, their friends know about them, their friends' friends know about them, so the word is spreading around that there are people who are objecting, there are people who are not willing to serve the occupation. So people who are thinking, and there are still some people like that in Israel who are thinking about the situation and they are not happy about that, and there are a lot of them, all the time have to struggle with this alternative. And as Matan said, the amount of people who are looking to the other way is growing. Still, it's not a massive number, and it's still not changing totally the situation here. But we hope for the best, and we hope that their resistance will be a small contribution or a big contribution, actually, against the occupation from the Israeli side. And other people will open their mind, and if they see the reasoning that the refuseniks are taking, they might change their political view or might refuse themselves. So it will probably help the fight against the occupation.
I want to emphasize again the importance of, in my opinion, the contribution to the Palestinian public opinion. I think it's amazing how huge an effect it can have when people on the other side, who are used to seeing Israelis as either soldiers or the fanatic settlers that they're aware of, seeing all of a sudden another kind of Israeli, of people who see the Palestinians as partners, who see them as people that we want to be good neighbors of, and that totally changes the situation in a lot of cases. I know a friend of mine who's standing trial with me, Chagai Matal, received a very a quite amazing letter from a Palestinian young person who told him that he was previously a Hamas sympathizer, that he was actually considering going out and blowing himself up in Israel and killing people, and that when he heard about refuseniks and when he understood all of a sudden that Israeli society isn't all of peace and that not all Israelis are for the occupation and want to kill all the Palestinians, that totally changed for him. And I think that's for me, that's a very, very important part of the project, to show the other side that we want peace. Because each side doesn't believe that the other side wants peace, and that's why they themselves don't go out and work for peace, because they're afraid of the other side and what the other side will do. And once we make that peace and we tell the other side we want peace and we're willing to do a lot and to give up a lot of our freedom and of our privileges in order for there to be peace, then that means a lot, and that can change things.
I wonder if you can tell us what the consequences of this action that you and the others Israeli refuseniks that are currently going through your trial. What consequences do you all face?
I think one of the greatest signs of how important the refusenik movement has gotten is the way the army is acting towards. About a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, if I had refused at that date, and then I would probably have sat in jail something like 3 or 4 months and then been released by the Army's incompatibility committee. Since a year ago, actually, of more than 15 people who have refused, only two have been released. That is, the rest of us are either in jail or an open detention, or at home waiting for some decision from the army. That is, and most of us are obviously sitting in jail these very, very long periods. And at the court-martial that we're facing right now, we could get up to 2 years in jail, which would make the total something near the 3 years that we were supposed to give if we were soldiers. It's it's very much a harsher policy by the army, and I think this represents a certain fear, a certain worry on their part that the movement is growing, and they even say it out loud when they're asked their reasons. They say, we're afraid that this is a spreading phenomenon and that we have to act harshly for it not to spread. Actually, I think that's quite a mistake on their part, because the more they put us in jail, the more they make martyrs out of us, I think that's the more publicity we'll get, and the better for our struggle.
Noam, I want to ask you, as Matan's father, your perception of what is happening to the refuseniks in the mainstream's coverage. Do you see a sort of growing divide in Israeli society among the older generation in the leadership, in the government, in the military, and this younger generation which is refusing to participate in that older generation's occupation?
Well, I wouldn't put it as a difference between the older and the younger. It's still a division between the peace movement and the settler movement, and there is a wide range of people in between. So the radical peace movement is saying that peace is possible if the government of Israel will declare that they are willing to negotiate giving up all the occupied territories back to the Palestinians. If that kind of a sincere statement will be made, it will fall on the Palestinians' ears, and peace is possible. But as long as the government of Israel is saying, we are willing to do that, and we are willing to give 50% of the occupied territories, just if the Dakhlan will do this, and if the Palestinian Authority will do that, and keep on the settlements, and Sharon saying, build it quietly, don't make a lot of noise. And the whole issue of dismantling the settlers is just a joke in the last two, 3 weeks. So there is the division in Israel is between the people who are thinking that we should conquer the occupied territories, who are supporting the settlers. And I think that this is a minority in Israel of 20-25%. The majority of the people in Israel are willing to give up the occupied territories and are against the settlements, though they are being kind of brainwashed in terms of we cannot do it because of a security reason. And that's where Sharon is getting in. He's talking about peace and security, but he's not willing to give anything to the Palestinians. So the youngsters are just part of the refuseniks, are part of the peace movement that, to be honest, shrinked in the last few years in Israel. But this movement is still here, and there are still people who are saying that peace is possible if we give up the occupation.
I think I would differentiate differently between the older and the younger people in Israel. I think Israel, like the rest of the Western world, has been going through the two decades a very strong and quite vicious process of privatization, and this is ideologically as well as economically. Maybe the most frequent response that I get from people when I tell them that I'm refusing is they just tell me, "Well, why don't you dodge the draft? Why don't you get out of it in some way?" And they're not telling me we think you're wrong because we should be killing the Palestinians. They're telling me we think you're a fool because you could have gotten out of it some other way. And it's very typical because I think the new generation, the younger generation in Israel, feels less connection with the state as some sort of a higher cause that we should give up all of our creature comforts for, and it's much more of an egoistical generation that, you know, that we need to look out for ourselves, largely in part because the state doesn't look out for anybody anymore like it did 20 years ago. And that's part of the social disintegration which is going on in Israel. It's in general a very negative process, but one positive side effect that it has is that the ideological brainwashing that my father mentioned is working less and less among the young generation. A lot of people just want to get the hell out of here. You know, they know that economically the situation here is really bad, that people are blowing up left and right, It's not anywhere that it's not a place that people want to grow up and families, raise children. And I'm maybe a little bit hopeful, a little bit optimistic that we can use that that alienation and that trust of authority, and we can make it maybe point it in the right place and say that we should stay in this place. You know, this is the place where we want to make a future for our children, but it just has to be structured differently. And you know, it has to be a place where there's peace, where two peoples live side by side in independent states, each secure and free. And that has to be a social place where people, you know, where people aren't thrown out into the streets, and children don't starve as they've started doing in the past 2 years here, which never happened in Israel. There were never hungry children in Israel, but it's happening here in the past 2 years since the Intifada started. And maybe, just maybe, there are going to be some positive consequences of this situation when people start realizing that that authority and that the establishment is doing this out of its own interests and not out of the people's interests, and that peace can be gotten and we can build a better place here.
Now, both of you are talking much about what can be done within Israel by Israelis for the cause of peace and security in the area. But I wonder if you each can comment on what people can do here in North America.
I think people really have to worry about their own communities first, as I worry about my own community. But obviously, we live in a global world, and things aren't disconnected from each other. I think what's going on in Iraq, for example, this new occupation that started by the U.S. and Britain in Iraq, and which is already taking victims of the, you know, of the occupation soldiers and obviously of the Iraqi people. It's a phenomenon which is in principle similar to what's going on here, and I think people around the world, that's including North America, the belly of the beast, so to speak. You know, you have to rise up and take a stand against aggression, and against occupations of foreign countries, and obviously for democracy. But democracy has to come from within, in each and every country outside the world. It's around the world. It's not something that can be brought in from outside. And I think America, as Americans who are good citizens, all Americans that I know are good people, but America as a global power is really become quite dangerous to world peace in the past couple of years under Bush. And when Americans and Canadians, obviously, and Europeans rise up against this as they did before the war, I think that can make a huge difference for everybody around the world, and especially in the Middle East, which is only being, I don't think the war in Iraq was good for Israel. I think it only made the Middle East a more dangerous place, and it only made terrorism worse, as we saw in Saudi Arabia and in Morocco, and these things are just going to get worse as long as people think that, you know, problems of violence can be solved by more violence and the terror can be solved by war. That's not the way things work. And I think if Americans and Canadians rise up against that and go and demonstrate against the occupation of Iraq, go out and demonstrate against the ongoing military aid that the U.S. gives to Israel, that's something important. And that's not anti-Israeli, because it's an amazing fact that America, the U.S., I should say specifically, gives Israel money only for military use. That is, if Israel wants to use the money to feed hungry children, it can't do that. It's not allowed to do that by the United States. It can only buy weapons. And that's, I think, you know, I think Americans and Canadians should say, well, if you want to give money to Israel, give money to social programs in Israel. Don't give money to buy arms. That's not helping anybody. And that can really make a difference here.
And Noam, your thoughts, your son's speaking from a detention center now on trial as a refusnik in the Israeli army. I wonder if you can say a few words about how people in North America might be able to support him in his work there.
Yeah, I would like to be more concrete. I would ask people in North America to contact the Israeli embassy and to protest against the continuation of the settlements, against the occupation, and against imprisoning people that cannot serve in the Israeli army according to their consciousness. Raising the issue of consciousness objectors with the issues of occupation is a good reason to send letters, to call the Israeli embassies, and to bother the Israeli government about what they're doing in the occupied territory, noting to those people in the embassies or in the government of Israel, or sending letters to the Prime Minister or to the Ministry of Defense objecting the imprisonment of these youngsters, calling for Israel to stop the occupation and to declare its willingness to go to sign peace on the basis of the Green Line. So such a campaign will obviously help, and I think people can do this. I know that on the 15th of May there were quite a few demonstrations around the North America in front of Israeli consulates, and I think this should be continued. We also have a fund to help some of the youngsters. Some of them need funds to take lawyers in cases of court-martial or in case of other cases. Just recently, we helped one of the kids get out of the army, and we had lawyers that were working for him, and we had to pay for it. So we also in kind of need of a little bit help in funding the struggle in the court and also in publishing the whole issue. So the main issue is to bug the Israeli consulates and embassies, and other ways is to find ways to help us here in Israel.
We've been speaking with Noam and his son Matan Kemner, both speaking to us from Israel. Matan is currently being held in detention and on trial as an Israeli refusenik. Did either one of you have anything that you'd like to add?
I have one small addition. The refuseniks aren't the only political prisoners being held unjustly by Israel. There are over 2,000 Palestinians who are being held for months and even years in detention at Israeli without seeing trial. It's called administrative detention, and it is absolutely unnecessary and it's immoral. These people are not, you know, they're not brought up to trial on any. There's no charges against them. They're pure political prisoners, and it stopped as well as the imprisonment of refuseniks. I think these people are usually people fighting against occupation, whether you know, within organizations or their everyday lives. And that's the, in Israel has a lot of people that it's holding, people of conscience that are being held in jail and in detention, and that needs to stop. So you know, if you want to support the refuseniks, we'll thank you for it. Support the political prisoners and conscience around the world, and help us to get released.
Again, thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.